broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Because the lawyer said it was legal. He said it did not fall within the anti-torture.
Could be a test firing of an intercontinental ballistic missile.
It's just awful. I mean, it's disgusting that would happen.
I think the laws should be passed.
Stop crying, you sniveling ass. Stop your nonsense.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast. 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And through the looking glass we go yet again, man. I mean, we just go places other talk shows wish they could. They can't. And they say, you go ahead, Phil. You draw the fire, man. You go ahead. You, we'll see where the, you know, you be the point, man. We'll see where the enemy is. And if they cut you down, baby, then we come walking in over top of you. But we thank you. That's the role we've played for so very long. I know I'm being overly dramatic as I start the show, but what the hell? It's a grabber, ain't it? President Bush faces a new barrage of criticism over waterboarding. Dean Wheeler from the Northern California Holistic Center is going to be talking with us momentarily about the president, his book tour, his book, and the questions arising over waterboarding. Can your boss get you fired if you criticize him? Can your boss get you fired? Your boss can fire you, but if you criticize your boss on Facebook, is that grounds for firing? We're going to talk about that. Plus, the Pentagon cannot explain if a missile was launched off the coast of Southern California or not. Now, we do know we have Vandenberg Air Force Base up there, and a lot of weird purple lights and things have happened over the years, and especially to my generation, to see purple. Well, in any event, we'll be talking about that. Bobby Dooley and Dean Wheeler are special guests this evening. 877-876-PHIL. And our affiliate spotlight tonight, KBSZ, 1260 AM in Phoenix, Arizona, and WTMA, 1250 AM in Charleston, North Carolina. Is that Charleston, North Carolina, or is that Charleston, South Carolina? Is there a Charleston, North Carolina? Double check that, will you, bud? Because if there is a Charleston, North Carolina, I am one happy man, because I just said that there is. 877-876-PHIL. Don't forget our website is philhenryshow.com. Right now, live streaming video of the show, as well as live streaming audio of the show and podcasts of the show. In fact, we got two brand new classic Phil podcasts that are up on the site right now, and we'll tell you about those a little bit later on in the hour. Dean Wheeler joining us now from the Northern California Holistic Center. In Mill Valley, California, and we're going to talk about President Bush. He's on this book tour, Dean, and he just came out in an interview and defended, as you know, his waterboarding of I guess, terrorists. And some people are taking him to task.
Well, and well, they should, Phil. I know that you and many of your listeners are fans of President Bush's. That is going to have to speak for itself, I guess, as history continues. But and I don't begrudge you your opinions about a very controversial president, but George Bush was eventually replaced by President Barack Obama, who is doing his level best to lift the United States out of this morass of international condemnation and scorn. And right as Barack Obama is beginning to make a significant move, and I think if you're a horse racing fan, Phil, you know that there comes a time when the horse of a thoroughbred race, where the horses go around a track at the racetrack. Have you ever seen that?
I grew up in Arcadia, California.
Oh, the home of Santa Anita.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up right behind Santa Anita. So, yes, I'm familiar with horse racing.
Well, there is a point when the horse, as they say in the business, makes its move. And he digs in and heads down the home stretch. Well, that's what President Obama, I think, is doing now. He's digging in. And
he's digging in and heading down the home stretch after losing so many seats in Congress.
I think that this is exactly when presidents show their strength, though. I think I'm glad you brought that up, because I think this is when a president really shows what he's about, when he is up against it, when he has the Congress and so many people foaming at the mouth. When I think of Barack Obama, I think of a man of great equanimity, a man who is very intelligent and very calm, and he's being faced down by people who are foaming at the mouth almost.
Well, I don't, at times it seems like that. At times like the opposition to President Obama is a little hairy looking. I mean, there are a lot of very angry people. But the fact is the country is distressed. And I imagine that a president should feel that way, or a president should expect that. But what do you mean he's going to make his move?
Well, I think he is making his move in the sense that now the president's ability to bring the country together is going to be seen. And right when he's ready to make that move, as we used to say back in the 80s, we would talk about busting a move, as in dancing. Right when the president's about to bust a move, out of the sarcophagus of history comes George Bush talking about how waterboarding was all right, talking about how Kanye West had no right to speak out as a black man.
He never said that he had no right to speak out as a black man.
Well, he did dismiss Kanye West's criticism of racism. It's very hard to, when a black man calls you a racist, there's no guarantee that he's right, but it's just more difficult to argue that down. And
all right, so George Bush has, if I'm listening to what you're saying, Dean, with this new book by the president, what is the name of this book, by the way?
I think it's called Decision Points.
Decision Points, right. With the president's book and the book tour, you're saying he is stealing a little thunder?
He's not so much stealing the thunder of Barack Obama. He is in the midst of rewriting history. So what I think he's doing is, if we could compare Barack Obama's presidency to a transcontinental jet that is flying with some 300 or 400 passengers on board, in many ways George Bush is a terrorist, and I'm not.
Oh, come on!
No, I'm using that as just.
That's a very unfortunate, ridiculous comparison of the days that we live in, Dean. I mean, the president, a terrorist in what way? You're not suggesting he's killing anybody.
Of course I'm not. I'm saying, what does a terrorist do to a transcontinental flight? Well, he aborts the flight. And President Bush, by appearing now, all I'm saying is now, why couldn't he have waited until after President Obama's presidency was all done? He could have. But he chose to have his book come out now at the midterm elections in the president's first term to tell everyone, I'm George Bush, and look how much better I was as a president.
And, well, do you think that people are...
And I think that people are going to be influenced by that because they're frightened. The American people are frightened, and when you're frightened, you tend to believe anything that looks as if it's going to give you relief.
Do you really think that the president is saying to people, look at how much better I am? Do you think that's it?
Oh, I, without question.
I mean, I know that we've seen the billboards. I know we've seen a lot of people who, whatever the organization, hey, do you miss me yet? All of that stupid stuff. My opinion, and you tell me whether I'm right or wrong, is the following. If you loved George Bush, you're always going to love him. If you love President Obama, you're always going to love him. And then there's a very, very small school of people like myself who see them as presidents, not just necessarily the men, but as presidents, and they have a very tough job.
Well, I don't think you can. I don't know what that means. You say that you're part of that group?
I think that I am, yeah.
And what is that group again?
People who are not necessarily going to say their politics are wrong, but to see them in a very unique position in history, that of being a president. And so you have to become more pragmatic, you know.
Well, I'm not willing to play that game. I don't think the American people are willing to play that game. Right now we have a president who is trying to do his best to pull this country from the jaws of what was almost an economic disaster. The world was poised on the precipice of depression. President Obama was able to pull us back from that. President Obama is now trying to effect other remedies, and right as he is in the home stretch ready to bust that move, just like any, if you saw that movie, Secretariat, here comes Bush with his book about how waterboarding is something that is should be brought back. And the fear and the absolute fear that puts into the American people, not to mention the fact that small band of extremists who want to see waterboarding resurrected will take this to mean it's time to begin to campaign on behalf.
So what you're telling me is you're afraid of some reversion to Bush-style politics.
I am afraid of not a reversion. President Obama would never do that. But I'm afraid of the American people saying, there's President Bush. Let's go back to the way that was, because this man, Obama, it scares me, and we want to turn around and go back. That's what the Tea Party people are about. They want to turn around and go back. And if that's a message that I could give to people tonight, I'd say we can't do it. We can't turn around and go back to waterboarding and go back to the horrible abuses, the photographing of men in the prison, naked. We can't do it.
All right, Dean, you don't think you're being overly dramatic?
How am I being overly dramatic?
With the president coming out and doing a book tour here and talking about what it was like being president of the United States, you think he's trying to hijack the Obama presidency?
Without question. Without question. He's putting down Kanye. Well, here's a white man saying that Kanye West is wrong. Yes, he's a president. Here is a man saying that waterboarding was good. Here's a man who we elected Barack Obama to take us into a new time of understanding and cooperation with nations. And Bush is back talking about how he's glad he waterboarded people. He was happy to do it. I think it's terribly destructive.
877-876-PHIL is the number here. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Dean Wheeler is talking about George Bush, and we're going to listen to some clips of the president when we come back. George Bush, who is on a new book tour, as you know. The book is called Decision Points. And in the book, he talks about, being happy that he waterboarded people. In the book, he talks about other issues and other decisions that he made that he supports. And he's been taking a lot of heat from a lot of people. And Dean is saying that the president, in coming out with this book and coming out with this book tour, is trying to destroy Barack Obama. He's trying to disrupt Barack Obama's presidency. He's trying to ruin whatever progress Barack Obama is going to make. He's trying to, get America off track. Do you agree with that? 877-876-PHIL. And then we'll listen to a few comments from President Bush, I think, in his interview with Matt Lauer on the Today Show. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, coming right back.
Phil Hendry. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here. Dean Wheeler with us from the Northern California Holistic Center. Dean, I know you're not a George Bush fan. You're not a conservative. You are a progressive. You have suggested that George Bush on this book tour right now is looking to wreck President Obama's presidency. And I've said to you, it looks like it's on its way to being wrecked when you take a look at this midterm.
But I said to you that this is when a strong president asserts himself, and this is when a horse makes, this is when he's making his move. He's about to make a move, and he's going to make a move down the home stretch, and here comes George Bush. And
all right, if we're using the horse racing analogy, what is it that George Bush is, if Barack Obama is Seabiscuit?
Well, that's a little racist, Phil.
What are you talking about? You were using the horse racing analogy.
I meant more that Barack Obama is the jockey. When you say he's a horse, it's very racist because, as you know, the slave traders and those people that dealt with slaves often paraded slaves as if they were horses. So that was very racist.
And no, it wasn't racist. I was taking what...
I think it was very racist.
It was taking what you said. Oh, I'm not going to argue the point with you. Who is George Bush then?
Well, if we're using your analogy, George Bush is on the back of Barack Obama, whipping him and beating him, and never allowing him to make his move.
All right, let's get rid of the horse racing analogy, because obviously you want to turn that into a racist rant, okay?
Well, you brought up the horse that Barack Obama was Seabiscuit, And
all right, let's say he's the jockey then. I'm not trying to say anything that's negative to the president. You brought up the horse racing analogy.
I'm saying to you that if Barack Obama, are we agreed that he's the jockey and he's not Seabiscuit with his mouth being pulled open to look at his teeth?
Yes, that's fine.
You're sure?
Yes, I'm fine with that.
Then I would say that President Bush is the jockey next to Barack Obama, and he's taken his whip, and he's beating Barack Obama's horse. That is called a foul. And I believe that President Bush is fouling Barack Obama by coming out and talking on these talk shows and saying to Matt Lauer and everyone, I have a book, and waterboarding, was I like doing it, and look at how President Obama, everyone hates him. And
I don't think the president's done that at all. He's been nothing but very respectful to President Obama. He said he's got enough critics, and I'm not going to be another one.
Well, he has to say that so that he doesn't look as if he is being mean-spirited. But by saying that waterboarding was almost fun...
And he never said that waterboarding was fun. I think that you are doing what a lot of critics of President Bush had to do, and that is make a few things up here, Dean.
I beg your pardon, Phil. I'm not making up anything.
The president never said that waterboarding's fun. He said it was effective. Our number is 877-876-PHIL with Dean Wheeler here from the Northern California Holistic Center. Here is Craig in Naples, Florida. You're on the Phil Hendry Show, Craig, with Dean Wheeler. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to call in and just make a response to your guest speaker. I think that his characterization that Bush was glad and happy that he waterboarded is just the most mischaracterization of what I have heard from Bush. And I think it's just unbelievable that people can define these views against all the what's out there.
Right.
I did not get that he's glad or happy.
I think he
whatsoever.
Said he enjoyed the information they got.
I didn't hear him say that he enjoyed the information.
Of course he did. Of course he did. If you're waterboarding an individual to get information, and the CIA brings it to you, you are overjoyed that you've gotten information that you believe, however wrong, will save lives. So George Bush was very happy to know that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed almost died at the hands of... And he did say, he said, damn right to waterboarding.
All right, Craig?
Yeah,
you still there?
What I have gotten from the two Bush interviews that I've seen
he's
is that he's a humble man. To criticize Bush for coming out with a book 2 years later, after the elections, as being some kind of subversion or some kind of tactic. I mean, where do you get this kind of stuff?
Well, sir, I could tell you that when I made my comment just a moment ago, you were very quiet. And I believe it's because I stunned you with my insight.
Actually, what do you mean
I was going through a drive-through. You didn't stun me at all, my friend. I am absolutely amazed at how you can take what I have seen. I see Bush as being humble. Talked about how Obama's got many critics out there, and that he doesn't have any interest in being another critic. And yet, it's still the same Bush bashing. And to say that he was glad, to say, you know, actually... To say that he was glad and happy that he waterboarded, I think is an absolute outright falsehood. And you can say that without blinking an eye?
Look at George Bush. You know there's something going on with him. There's a gleefulness.
No. Just take him for his word. Don't be
filling
in the line.
Yeah. You know, this is a man after 9/11 who shed tears, and he's been mocked for that.
Phil, I don't think. Do you really think George Bush knows how to cry? I don't. I think that George Bush probably learned how to cry just before he went on camera. And
what do you mean, do I think he knows how to cry?
Well, here's a guy that there's something wrong with. His mother showed him a fetus in a jar. Don't you think that would do something to your mind? Yes, it would. Yes, it would.
Yeah, maybe it made the man appreciative of his own sanity. I thank you for your call, sir. 877-876-PHIL. And this gentleman said it very well. Why can't you take him at his word?
There's something about George Bush. Man, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Are you believing George Bush on his current book tour when he says that he doesn't have anything to criticize President Obama about and waterboarding was good? We'll be back. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here on number 877-876-PHIL, talking with Dean Wheeler from the Northern California Holistic Center about the book tour that President Bush is on. Dean, you're into holistic healing and into homeopathy, and so people might wonder, why are we talking to you about political things?
Yeah.
Tell me.
Well, we do believe in a holistic world, which means that everything is connected. And while we do take care of the physical, we also have to take care of the mental, the spiritual, to live in a world that is dominated by personalities who think that waterboarding and war and the militarism of a distant age is still applies, and that's the beginning of what we hope will be the millennium of integration, the millennium of solidification, where we see a new man emerge, we think is very backward. And for George Bush to come on the national scene right as President Obama is, as the jockey and not the horse, making that move, because, again, your very racist comment, Phil, I'm not blaming you, but it shows how an underdeveloped and under-evolved personality will immediately go, oh, he's black, I guess he's a horse.
And no, you were the one that brought up the horse racing analogy, sir, and so I automatically began thinking of horses. When you say a horse makes its move, I thought you meant a horse.
No, I was talking about a man, so Obama would be the jockey on the horse.
Okay, so Obama's the jockey on the horse. But what you did say to me during the break was that you consider the burning of President Bush's book to be something that might be of value. And you talk about an old age solution. You talk about something from the medieval past.
No. You've completely destroyed. No, you've turned it into something ugly. You've turned it into something very ugly.
You said that you believe that President Bush's book, it would probably do well if we burned it.
I did, and I'll give you my reasons.
All right.
But you turned it into something very ugly. No, I said that this book reminds people of how evil this country once was. And it reminds people, especially people in Europe, of how regressive and backward we were. If we allow this book to be out there now, people will think that we've returned to that. And I'm saying that I stand against that. And you turned it into something black and ugly, Mr. Hendry. And
what? I can't think of anything that's more ugly than a book burning. I can't think of anything. And you talk about the Nazis. That was their specialty, burning books. And Fahrenheit 451 that Ray Bradbury wrote so eloquently about a future society where books are burned. I mean, this is the symbol of any free man or woman of repression, the burning of books.
It is the symbol only in the case of George Bush's book being burned. I didn't say anyone else's book. I only said his book. And you turn it into something ugly, and you turned it into something just ugly and vicious.
No, sir, I didn't. You did. 877.
No, you did.
No, you did by saying it ought to be burned.
Only that book.
877. Only that book. Okay. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Melissa. Go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show. Melissa with Dean Wheeler.
That's what I said.
Okay. First of all, George Bush's book has got nothing to do with Obama's presidency. Okay, and
what?
As far as...
I don't understand how you... But George Bush, out there right now, talking to the country about how great he was. All he's trying to do, as a jockey might in the home stretch, is take his whip and beat Obama's horse out from under him.
Okay, let's take horse races and all that out of it. We're talking about people.
Yeah, please. Please, yeah.
You know, the fact is you know, George Bush is an American citizen, and now he's able to put his voice out there as a Christian man that's just an American citizen and the hard decisions he had to make. That's all this book is about. And you're trying to make it out to be something a lot more than it really is. As far as waterboarding, I agree with Bush. It wasn't the right thing to do, but it certainly was effective. Because, I'm sorry, the Muslim people
would you want to see your children waterboarded? No, you wouldn't, would you? Would you want to see your newborn infant waterboarded?
Yeah, but the fact is I'm not the enemy, so I don't have to worry about it.
Wait a minute. What do you mean her newborn infant?
I'm just asking her. If she doesn't want to see her newborn infant waterboarded...
What's her newborn infant got to do with it? Her newborn infant hasn't done a thing. We have these guys that are suspects. They are international criminals. They are guys that we, arrested on a field of battle. We didn't bust them in some bar or in some alley or in a car. It wasn't a traffic stop. So we take them to a military brig, put them in front of a military tribunal, interrogate them, yes, using waterboarding...
Well, if you want to see that kind of a world come back, Mr. Hendry, and to this young lady as well, and any newborn infant she has, a wet rag shoved up its nose, okay, great. Yeah.
Well, all I can say is, we got the information that we needed to, move forward with the war that we have. We're trying to take care of the
cost. It was three people, too. Three people were waterboarded that he gave the go-ahead to. Three. And one of them, that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. All three of them scumbags. Let me ask something, Dean. If they ever waterboard Osama bin Laden, are you going to cry?
I beg your pardon?
Will you cry? Will you shed tears if Osama bin Laden is captured and waterboarded?
How dare you ask me?
No, man. Will you cry? And thank you very much, Melissa. Will you shed tears and cry and weep for Osama bin Laden?
I will weep for my country.
No, don't give me that bull crap. Will you feel bad for him?
I will. What do you mean bull crap?
You're the guy that wants to burn books, man. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Joe in Greenville, North Carolina. Joe, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Dean Wheeler. Go ahead.
Yes, I suggest is just trying to push the liberal agenda. Everyone's always about Bush bash and the economy and what Obama, inherited. But they forget that, the economy's downfall started with Clinton, starting with NAFTA, sending all of our jobs overseas. That started the downfall of this economy.
But how can NAFTA send the jobs overseas when it was the North American Free Trade Act? So it was sending jobs over land. There wasn't any ocean that they had to go over.
What do you mean?
North American free trade.
Right.
So that means Mexico and Canada.
No, that was CAFTA. CAFTA was North America, Mexico, South America. NAFTA was North American free trade, trading with North America, bringing things in and out of the country. We lost furniture jobs here in North Carolina. And then you talk about waterboarding. Wasn't it Thomas Jefferson who stated that the Tree of Liberty needs to be refreshed with blood of patriots and tyrants? Well, I'm all for the blood of tyrants refreshing the Tree of Liberty.
Well, I don't know if what you're saying is true, that Thomas Jefferson wrote that. We have to go back.
Yes, he did, okay.
Well, there's a lot of stuff that's being made up on the Internet, especially by Jesse Ventura.
And what do you mean, Jesse Ventura? Thomas Jefferson, what are you talking about?
I mean that Jesse Ventura has made things up and said that Thomas Jefferson said it. And I think that, I'm not saying that this gentleman believes, but this man, Jesse Ventura, was a wrestler, and then he became a governor, and he makes all these claims about Thomas Jefferson said this and that, and he's lying because he wants everyone to think he knows about Thomas Jefferson, and he doesn't. Number two, the waterboarding that George Bush did on Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is neither here nor there. The fact that Bush was happy when he heard about it and couldn't contain his laughter
Well, you're not getting any of this out of the book. You're just making this up because you want Bush to fail with this book tour because you don't want any what you call negativity brought toward the Obama administration, and you're afraid that the president is going to draw attention away from him. Thank you so much, Joe, for your call. Here is Peter in Petaluma, California, on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, Peter.
No, I didn't say that at all. I said
I don't know where
President Obama.
All right, go ahead. Go ahead, Peter.
I don't know where to begin with this guy, Phil. First of all, I will demand an apology from him for calling you a racist. And if he doesn't give you an apology, I wouldn't give this guy any more airtime. How dare he call you a racist for beginning to make an analogy? That's the game that these guys play. They put you on the defensive, calling you a racist. You compared Barack Obama to a horse. My nose, you compared him to a horse. Shame on you.
Did.
Don't play
you
that
called
game.
Him, Mr. Hendry called him a horse. And everyone knows that the slaves had their mouths opened up.
Oh,
and the
cut it out. Don't go any further, Dean, without
oh,
one.
Come
no,
on,
no
Dean.
No one's going to listen to
Look
you.
At, dude, you know, Dean, you were the guy that brought up the horse racing analogy in the first place. You said when the horse makes its move. So I thought that you were making an analogy not just between the president and a horse, maybe the ex-president.
Well, you say that because you have comrades, but if you were with me and my...
Don't even make excuses
for
this guy. He's got no right to make that accusation. He has absolutely no right to make that accusation and put you on the defensive. And shame on him, and I would demand an apology from him for doing that. I had no...
It's fine. I don't need one. He knows. Dean can't... He can't admit he's wrong because that would mean he'd lose credibility.
Let me ask both of you a question.
Sure.
Have you ever seen a black jockey? No. Next point.
Have I ever seen a black jockey?
Yeah.
What in the world are you trying to prove, sir?
My point is this exactly, that when President Bush arrived with this book of his and his ringing the chimes of waterboarding, the evil of the American attack on Iraq, and everything else,
can I tell you something, sir? Let me interrupt you. Can I tell you something?
Ruin.
First of
President
all,
Obama.
I am not in favor of human torture. But if waterboarding is what we had to do to get the information from these guys, I would waterboard them all day long. These are vermin. These are vermin that kill innocent people. And if we can get information from that way, and let me tell you also, I'm not convinced that we can, but if we can get information from that way, then it ought to be done not with smiles. And George Bush never smiled, and he never happily told anyone that waterboarding was done. So stop spreading the falsehoods. I'm not a George
no,
Bush...
I'm just saying that when the president
no,
heard
you're
about
not
the
just
results,
saying anything,
he
sir.
Kicked
you're
his
you're
feet
making
in the air.
Things up, and you should not be given the airtime to be.
How
saying,
do you know that?
The word is that the president was laying in bed when they came in and said, "Mr. President, here is what Khalid Sheikh Mohammed gave up," and the president kicked his feet in the air.
The right. word is
for Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, I would do exactly the same thing joyfully.
Oh, look at how the two of you. Think it's
no, 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 no! Don't play that game. Don't you dare play that game of putting people in the little convenient package you want to put them in. You're the one that should be put on the defensive, sir.
And you're the guy that said that Bush's book ought to be burned.
And you are trying to make me into a fascist. I'm not a fascist. In that one case, that book should be burned. In no other cases.
That book should be burned. What a thing that would be in our country, in America, to see a book burning. That would just about pretty much finish us, wouldn't it?
How dare you?
How dare you? How dare you say that we should burn his book, nobody else's book, because you think somehow we're going to get away with that. The photographs of a book burning in America going around the world, that would pretty much just flush our... You talk about flushing our image down the toilet. That would do it.
No worse than what President Bush did.
Can I ask this guy a question, Phil?
What do you want?
I want to know if you saw Barack Obama bow to the King of Saudi Arabia. Did you see that? Yes
that
or no, sir?
It was
just
misinterpreted.
A quick yes or no. Don't blow
it
me
wasn't
it
a bow.
On me. Give me a quick
it wasn't
yes or
a,
no.
It wasn't a bow. It was not a bow.
Oh,
all.
My God. Let me come over
no,
here.
It
I'll
was
show
not
you a picture
a bow.
Of it 27 times in a row. He bowed down to the
you it's a bow. To you, it's a bow. And let me ask you a question. If I had a photograph, if I had a photograph of you looking to see if your shoes were tied, and someone said, "Look at Peter, he's bowing," And I said, no, he's looking to make sure his shoes are tied.
I'll show
what would you say?
YouTube video.
That's right.
He bowed down.
What are you claiming? What are you claiming? I want to know what, excuse me, Peter, what are you claiming, Dean, the president did?
He was glancing to make sure something below the waist was proper.
Idiotic. That was truly idiotic.
Why? Why do you think that's idiotic? Why couldn't he be looking to make
because
sure that
I
he
saw the picture of exactly what he did on YouTube. Did they make that up? Maybe they doctored the video to make you angry. Is
they
that
could.
Really?
Yes, they could have done that. They do it all the time.
Okay, then
it's
let me ask you another question, sir. Let me ask you another question. Let's make the grand assumption that he did bow to the King of Saudi Arabia. What would you think about that?
He is bowing to the King of Saudi Arabia. Otherwise, you are put into prison. You're not aware of that?
What would you think about
you
that?
Wait a minute. Are you telling me that the President of the United States would be put into prison if he wasn't...
There would be a very great problem.
Oh, my goodness. Do you have any
the
idea what you're talking about, Dean?
We would lose credibility among the Arabians.
What do you mean we'd lose...
Yes.
Are you telling me that if the president didn't bow in front of the Saudi Arabian king, he would be thrown in prison?
You know, Mr. Henry, it shows how I have to walk away from this point.
I will not let you walk away from this point. Do not divert attention.
Do not divert attention from this point. You know why he bowed? Do you know why he bowed? He did bow, and you know why? Because the Saudi Arabians would have executed Americans that they have in prison.
Oh, come on.
Are you telling me that that isn't the case? That's what he saved the lives of God knows how many Americans.
That is
who might
the
have
most...
Been, they would have had their hands cut off.
From?
Their hands would have been cut off.
You don't know that that's the case. All right, Peter, thanks for your call, and we'll be back here with Dean Wheeler. And now we're really off in a fantasy land. You know, I would like to see that videotape of whether Obama bowed or whether he was looking to see if his fly was up. I don't know. 877-876-PHIL on the line with Dean Wheeler from the Northern California Holistic Center on President Bush's book tour and how it is, quote, destroying the Obama administration. Phil Hendry Show.
It's the God. Phil Hendry Show.
Oh, my God.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
About that.
I have Dean Wheeler with me from the Northern California Holistic Center. Dean is a progressive. Dean is not a fan of George Bush and George Bush's new book entitled Decision Points, being promoted by the former president nationally, internationally. He's on a lot of shows. You think that it is a publicity tour that is subverting President Obama's presidency by reminding people of how evil we were, that the former President Bush is gleeful and happy that he waterboarded people and generally reminds people of a time when America wasn't all that great. And I got to tell you, Dean, just for this guy here and some of the people we've been talking to, I'm happy to see President Bush. I sort of miss the guy, to be honest with you. I really do.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Don't act like it's some scary, like I'm the monster in the sci-fi movie. I do miss the guy, to be honest with you. And while he was an unpopular president for a lot of people...
Oh, my... For you to miss this guy...
While he was unpopular with a lot of people, he was popular with this guy here, Hendry. And I don't know of any man who would have been president of the United States at the time that George Bush was president who would have made every move exactly the right way that he should have made it. And all of the hindsight and all of the Monday morning quarterbacking that went into, the epilogue of the Bush presidency, I think was laughable. Laughable to sit there and say, well, here's what I would have done.
Well, Phil, I don't even know where to begin with you.
And to say that that Obama, and I respect President Obama, and I want him to do well, unlike a lot of people. But are you telling me he wasn't bowing?
I'm telling you that President Obama, for the last time, I'm telling you, that President Obama knew that he would intimidate the Saudi king with his size. So he tried to get, what he tried to do was adjust his height the best way he knew how. And in bowing, he was showing the Saudi Arabian king, look, see how small I can get? Because he saw fear in the man's eyes. He saw fear, and he tried to alleviate that fear. And you, what do you want to do? You want to put the man on the rack for that?
So President Obama wasn't bowing. He was saying, look at how small I can get?
He was saying to the Saudi king, don't be frightened. He could see that the man was in stark raving fear of this big, tall buck.
Buck, huh?
I didn't know. I did not say that.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did, Mr. Progressive.
No, I did not. How dare you?
Buck!
I said big, tall, black.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. And it's what you have been putting words, you've been not only putting words in my mouth, you've been shoving words in my mouth, you've been sliding words into my mouth, you have been wedging words into my mouth. You have been forcing my mouth open and saying, take this word.
And I heard you say what you said. 877-876-PHIL. Let me get over to another phone caller here tonight. We have we got a break? Oh, we're all out of time.
Yeah, well, good thing, because I can assure you I'll be on the phone to my lawyer first thing tomorrow morning at 8 a.m.
What time does his office open?
9.
Okay.
I mean, no. Let me say that again. You know, you're a bastard.
Thank you. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back next hour. We have Vernon, whoever we got, Bobby Dooley.
Phil Hendry.
You had Vernon last night.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
I think the laws that we passed, they were good.
It's just awful. I mean, it's disgusting that would happen.
These are kids who are getting less sleep, who are less physically active.
And I just didn't understand, you know, why at this time.
World famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m.
Good day.
On the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And we go through the looking glass and beyond to places where no other talk show in the history of the medium have ever gone, will ever go, can ever, would have, could ever, can't, you know what I mean. 877-876-PHIL is the number. And on our show tonight, of course, we have Bobby Dooley this hour to talk about a new study, healthy sex makes men live longer. Healthy sex makes men live longer. It sounds like a good thing, but what are the drawbacks? What are the downsides to that? And we'll talk with Ms. Dooley, a wife, a mother, the head of the Homeowners Association there, as well as the Parent Teacher Organization. Our website, philhendryshow.com, right now available to you with live streaming video and audio of our show. If you go over, you can get a backstage pass and watch what's going on. We have two brand new Classic Phil podcasts available. Each and every day, new podcasts of our show available to you, as well as a mini podcast, as well as thousands and thousands of hours of archives that are being made into downloads every day. So not just as the stuff isn't just on our website, but it is downloadable and you can enjoy it. And we our classics this week, as a matter of fact, go back 10 years to 2000 when Art Griego was talking about some bizarre thing having to do with TWA 800. So go over to our website and enjoy it. PhilHendryShow.com. A study in Italy. A healthy sex life makes men live longer, according to Italian scientists, providing that you are a faithful partner. A healthy sex life makes men live longer, providing that you are a faithful partner. Italian medical researchers carried out a series of studies as part of a medical conference, and they found that a healthy sex life means fewer cardiovascular problems for men. Joining us from the Western Estates Homeowners Association is Bobby Dooley, who is not only the president of their Homeowners Association, she's also the chairperson for their upcoming Wintertacular, right, Bobby? Or is it your Falltacular?
No, this is going to be our Wintertacular. This is going to be our Wintertacular, Phil, and it's coming up in December. So we are excited about it, and it's part of what makes our community very unique. And we have a fashion show and a lot of things that benefit charities in the area.
Right. And you are a woman, a married woman with children. Did you see this study here concerning the so-called healthy sex life of men? Obviously that this is not anything that's groundbreaking, right?
Well, you know, so when you called me up and you asked to talk to me about this, the first thing I thought of was, well, I'm not really a doctor.
I don't really know how I qualify. And then I realized that my husband and I are very healthy, and I won't get obviously graphic about that.
No.
But we are very much in love and still in love, and we've been married for 15 years. We have three sons. We have a beautiful home. And I've had a very, very tough day, so if you pardon me, I'm just taking a little bit of a bath.
That's all right.
So, yes, if it is a question of can we talk to a woman on our show whose husband is going to live longer, I think Steve is going to live longer. And what does that mean in the overall, though? And I think that's the bigger question.
Well, what do you mean in the overall?
Well, how many men are happily married?
Okay.
How many men, if they are not happily married, are obviously not fulfilled sexually? And if they are not fulfilled sexually, does that mean we are looking at a generation of men, like the past generation, like my father's generation, of men who are going to die prematurely? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But I do know that this study is very much an eye-opener.
You know, my father lived to be 72. I don't think it had anything to do with his sex life. But we do know now that 72, it does seem, as crazy as this sounds, I mean, there was a time in my life when I was younger, when a guy was 72, he was up there. And if he lived past his 70s and got into his 80s, he was way up there. Now, it seems like living to be in your 80s is not unusual, right?
Well, you know, I agree with you, Phil. My father lived to be 71 years old. And it has been a very, very big point of contention between myself and my mother, because I loved my father very much. We were very, very heartbroken when we lost him.
And what did he die from?
Well, you know, the official medical report was that my father died from pneumonia. But we all know in our family what we feel killed my father, and that was my mother. And the, I don't know what you would call it, but the, I think the man was starving for good lovemaking.
So do you agree? So do you, in other words, you think your father died from this?
Well,
you think your, what contributed to your father's death was a not a healthy sex life?
I don't know, because obviously when my father died.
If you don't mind me asking, when did he die?
My father died in 1998.
Okay, and I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, thank you, Phil. But I don't know. I think that having read this study now, I can put two and two together. I knew that my father looked frustrated, and I was continually suspicious that my mother was, there was something I don't think she was doing. She spent an awful lot of time with a member of their household staff who was driving driving them to different things. He was their driver. They had a Lincoln Town Car.
Your parents had a, boy, that's quite a bit of money, huh?
Yeah, my father was very successful. He was.
All right, so they had a driver. You suspect your mother was involved with this man?
I suspect. But if it's true, it explains an awful lot, because my father looked not so much unhappy. Steve, did you see my father?
He looked back, like, well.
Go ahead.
He looked backed up.
He said he looked backed up.
All right, well, let's not say that. I mean, let's say that he was frustrated.
Well, he was. I think he was. That's right, Steve. I'll do it. I don't know, Phil. All I know is I don't want to see men go through what my father went through. I don't want to see men go through what my mother put him through.
But you don't have any real... See, what I'm saying is you don't have any...
Phil, could you hold on for a minute? Give me the towel.
Got a towel over there?
Yeah, the one over there.
Over there?
Hold on for just a minute. I'm so sorry, Phil. The one that you're, the one that I'm pointing to, Steve.
That one.
Yes, that one.
But I didn't know if you meant that one.
Okay. Could you read? I'm so sorry, Phil.
The question I had was, does your father, well, I don't really have a question. I guess my statement is that your dad looked unhappy.
Yes, he looked unhappy. He looked unhappy in the sense that he was very happy always to see us. He was very happy always to see the boys who were very, very young when he died, but he had such great joy in his grandchildren. But he would shift in his seat uncomfortably. He never looked like he was sitting comfortably. He walked in a very, I think the word is he walked in a very stiff-legged way. And so after a while, my sister and I both...
So you talked this over with your sister?
Oh, I did. I talked it over with Janine. I said, I really think that Mom has to come to the plate here. Because my dad would walk in a manner that I think, you know, any man would. So what I'm saying is this. I don't want to see other men suffer this way.
All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL. We're talking to Bobby Dooley about a study, Healthy Sex Life Makes Men Live Longer. And Bobby, in at least one case, is talking about her father, who she suspect was not attended to or did not have a happy, intimate life with your mother, Bobby, right?
That is our suspicion, yeah.
And as a result of that, died at a at what I think we can all say these days seems to be like a much younger age than we might have thought a few years ago. He died at the age of 71. You see so many men living into their 80s now. Question for you would be, you say that you don't want to see this happen to other men. How or what can we do? This is very private stuff.
You know, it really is private stuff, Bill. But there are those of us who I think can help. And I've got to be very delicate about how I put this. If you're a woman who is attractive and you can see the obvious discomfort that is around you, there is a real moral dilemma that we've got. What do I do? What do I do when I see a man who obviously has a very unhappy, intimate life? And I can make myself available to him.
No, you're not saying that you're going to have sex with a guy.
I don't know, Phil. I think it's a real question that women need to answer. Because we have a generation of men that are going to die much younger than they should.
And you're not saying that you're going to have a generation of women your age, Bobby. How old are you?
I'm 38.
38 years of age. Having sex with these men who are not your husbands.
But again, Phil, you're putting it in a sort of in a moral dynamic. What I'm trying to do is simply address it from the health standpoint. If having regular sex helps our men survive, and the women that they're married to are either unable to because of illness or because of some premature frigidity or whatever has happened to them, and you are an attractive woman, and you can, is it immoral?
But what are you talking about? Are you saying that if a man approaches you, even though you're a married woman, you have children, you've got a husband, he's unhappy, he's not getting sex at home, and we know that a healthy sex life makes a man live longer, you're saying any woman will do?
No, I would never say that, Phil. I think you have to do it with compassion. But if that man...
Well, let's just say that man was lucky enough to see you. Where would you be? I don't know.
I don't know where I'd be. I could be at a party. In a parking lot, I don't know, walking somewhere, and he sees me, I see him, I can tell right away that he looks, you know, my husband used the words, you didn't like them, backed up.
No, I don't like them because I think it addresses just the physical, okay?
No, I understand that, but isn't it my moral obligation, to help somehow alleviate that man? I don't know.
Well, I think by putting it out there that even if a woman is married, if she sees a man who is unhappy because his sex life isn't good, and you know that a healthy sex life helps a man live longer, and not having a healthy sex life may actually hasten that man's death, if you're saying that it is an obligation that women, no matter married or not, have to have sex with that man, I think you're stepping over a moral line.
I may be stepping over a moral line, but then again, I may be moving that moral line in the interest of health and life.
Yes, that's the point, Mr. Henry, about it.
Well, but Mr. Dooley, let me ask you. You're married to this woman. If your wife was going to have sex with another man because it would help him live longer...
Well, my wife, we're going to do it.
No, I would never do that. I wouldn't do that. This is something I'm just talking about hypothetically...
Do you think other women should do this?
Oh, absolutely. I think they should, because we are talking about life-giving.
Well, then why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't I? Because, Phil, I am not built that way. I don't give it up for any man.
Are you telling me that a woman who has sex with another man because it would help that man live longer, that woman is fine morally, but you won't do that because you aren't that loose?
I'm saying that I would not criticize any woman for having sex with a man to help him live longer, but I'm the president of a PTO. I'm the president of Western States Homeowners Association. I like to think I'm a little bit better than that. This is for women who can do these things, whose reputations are not going to suffer. That's all I'm saying.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. So the question would be, if you're a woman listening to this right now, and you know that healthy sex helps a man live longer, and you know a man who's not getting healthy sex, and by giving him that healthy sex, you could help him live longer, are you the kind of woman, morally, who can do that? Ms. Dooley recommends it, but she says she's not the kind of woman that's going to engage in that because she's a cut above. So I'm a little bit confused. What are we asking of women? Why don't you go ahead and have sex with that guy? It'll help him live longer. But then again, you're the kind of woman that would. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Back in a moment with Bobby and Steve Dooley.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Of course I'm not going to do that.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. What is that bumper music? Good Lord. 877-876-PHIL. Back here on the Phil Hendry Show, we have Bobby and Steve Dooley along with us. The article here, a healthy sex life makes men live longer. Now, this was out of Italy. Dr. Emmanuel Giannini, coordinator of the research, said, what was evident from the research was that men who had active sex lives and were faithful to their partners had fewer cardiovascular complaints, and lived longer. What about that faithful to the partners thing?
Well, that's something that, as a community, as a society, when we recognize that men who are not being taken care of by their wives sexually should be serviced by any woman that can help them, then we take away that guilt. And I think that's what Dr. Giannini was talking about.
So that any woman in the community can have sex with a man who they feel is not being given proper attention at home.
That is correct, yes.
All right, and it goes on to say, increased sexual activity produces more testosterone, which leads to less depression, and a better cardiovascular performance, which means an improved metabolism. Dr. Giannini said the research has been carried out by the University of Florence on 4,000 men, and the study revealed that those who were unfaithful had a poor cardiovascular performance because they were also coping with the increased stress of their infidelity. She added that the study had shown a poor quality sex life could also lead to depression. Your comments, Bobby.
Well, I think it tells the story right there, Phil, and this is why we are in a very, very serious situation. We need for our men, all American men, to survive. These men are dying. They're dying in record numbers because they are not being taken care of, because their wives let them just drift and twist in the breeze. And as a result of that, they are depressed. So who fills in the void? This idea that a man is much happier when he is having regular sex, this is not a new idea. But the time has come for us as women to quit talking about it and start doing something about it. And if that means that I have to take care of some woman's husband, who is...
Well, now you're getting into some areas that are going to get... You're going to get some people pissed at you.
I don't care, Phil. We're talking about the...
My wife, if I'm going to do it, doing a thing like that.
Well, wait a minute. The two of you said, Bobby, you would not have sex with another man because you are you know, you're a cut above.
I'm saying, of course I'm going to be there if it's needed. I'm saying to other women listening to me, you can see the unhappy men out there. You can see the women that are not taking care of their men. So if that means that you've got to do another woman's job for her, then I say, by God, you got to do it. And I know it sounds shocking. There are so many sick and frail men. A lot of them do see me as a possible sex partner. I am very well put together. I don't think I'm the only one. I'm not a whore. I can do this if other women are not available, but I'd like to see other women step in. I don't need to shoulder the responsibility.
Well, you know what? Whether you're going to be shouldering the responsibility or other women are going to be jumping in with you here, Bobby, the fact that, of course, this study is talking about infidelity and a bunch of other bullcrap, that sort of puts to a lie what you're saying.
Excuse me?
Well, it says that men are not going to be happy if they don't have a regular sex life or if they're unfaithful.
I already explained that.
Yeah, I know. You explained about the society and if they accept it and all of this good stuff, okay? But the fact of the matter is, the guys are going to be unhappy if they're unfaithful to their wives.
No, they're not going to be unfaithful.
Mr. Ritter, you're not reading it right. They will be unfaithful if society accepts it.
Well, society is not going to accept men having sex with other women. Okay? I mean, men having, society's not going to accept, and husbands aren't. Are you going to accept that?
I just told you, my wife does.
I already told you, Phil, that I'm not going to be involved in that.
Okay. No, you said you would if you had to be.
I'll cross that bridge when I get to it.
Steve will cross that bridge when he gets to it.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Bobby and Steve Dooley about the lack of sex among men and how she's going to pitch in. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here on the Phil Hendry Show. Bobby and Steve Dooley from the Western Estates Homeowners Association. Healthy sex life makes men live longer. According to a study out of Italy, the healthier a man's sex life, the healthier he is, the longer he lives. And that would seem to make sense. But men are definitely being affected by this because men are dying at a premature age. Men are not necessarily getting the kind of sex that they would enjoy or deserve, or however you want to put it. According to Dr. Emmanuel Giannini, and we've been quoting her, Bobby, she said that a poor quality sex life leads to depression. All of the things that we could very well imagine. But your solution is a combination of sort of a throwback to a free love concept, sexual surrogate concept.
No, Phil. I think you really got this confused. I think what you envision a world where women are just sleeping with whatever man says he's unhappy. That's not the case at all. There are those of us who are already attractive to men. I'm not trying to talk about myself as some raving beauty. I'm just saying that obviously is the case. I did not create this world. I just live in it. So if we are women that men are noticing, whistling at, saying hello to, and so forth, then do we not have an obligation to ascertain whether that man is being provided for at home?
And well, how do you know that? I mean, a guy's going to tell you any story, okay? And I would ask Mr. Dooley, how would you know, sir?
Please don't talk to my husband. I'll talk to him.
My wife is talking about
that. I'll talk. I can ask my husband any question you want me to ask.
Well, I mean, I'm just, if he's there, because he's on the phone.
No, I'll ask him. What do you want me to ask him?
I want to know, how does he feel about you ascertaining whether men are...
Yeah, I got it. Hold on. What do you think, Steve, about... Do you want me to sleep with other men?
I don't know. I told you...
Yeah, he said yes. He said it would be fine with him.
And well, I didn't hear that.
Well, I'm telling you, that's what he said. And what else?
Well, could you have him say, Mr. Dooley, did you say yes?
I'll speak to my husband, thank you. Did you say yes, Steve? Yes, he said yes.
I didn't hear him.
Well, I heard him, Mr. Henry, and I would thank you to quit badgering my family.
Well, Ms. Dooley, I don't know whether or not your husband agrees with your philosophy or not, or whether he's just nodding his head. That, I mean, what are you telling me that your husband's okay with you sleeping with any guy that looks like he's not going to live very long?
I'm saying my husband recognizes that there are women like me who are attractive, who other men are attracted to, who can obviously provide that intimate life that a man is not getting at home. I'm sorry that men are not being taken care of by their wives. I wish it wasn't the case. I wish these women would take care of their husbands so I don't have to do it. But the fact is, I do. And so I am turned out there into the world, along with a lot of other women, and we are basically saying, okay, whatever we have to do to save your husband or boyfriend, we'll do that. But I can tell you this much, Phil. It isn't something that I like.
Well, she doesn't want to do it.
Mr. Dooley, I want to know, do you...
I'll speak to my husband, Mr. Henry.
I want to know whether he approves of this or not. And I have...
I told you he said yes.
I haven't heard him say yes. You tell me that he says yes. Mr. Dooley, do you approve of it?
He said yes.
Well, I don't believe that, and it sounds to me like you're not allowing the man to speak on the phone. So that means to me...
No, Mr. Henry, please don't put words in my mouth.
It sounds to me like you're not allowing the man to speak, and that to me means that he doesn't approve of that, that you're going to go out and have sex with these guys because you think it's going to help them or because it's just something that you want to do. Do you charge the money?
How dare you? If you're talking about a medical fee, we might, but no, I don't. And that is the most insulting question I have ever been asked.
But you are contemplating some kind of a medical fee. What's the difference between you and any sexual surrogate?
The difference is, Phil, that we don't cost money. The difference is we do it because we care about these men. The difference is we do it because we want to see Ben live longer and because there's no alternative. Either I have sex with a woman's husband or he dies. You can call it what you want.
Mr. Dooley, how much is your wife? Yeah, that's what I thought, okay?
Mr. Henry, help!
Did you hear that? All right, I want them called back, okay? Call them back right now. Call them back. 877-876-PHIL, the Phil Hendry Show here. I have Bobby and Steve Dooley on the phone talking about the possibility that Ms. Dooley and others and friends of hers and whoever, women, are out there having sex with men that aren't their husbands because a healthy sex life makes a man live. Ms. Dooley, I'd like to talk to your husband.
My husband is in the bathroom right now.
Then why did I hear him just say, help me?
Because he had to go to the bathroom.
Because he had to go to the bathroom, he said, help me.
Yes. You are really, you're in trouble.
You're in trouble. You're telling me that you have the clearance of your husband, and this all sounds just copacetic, and it's very moral. And when I ask to talk to the guy, I don't get to hear him.
Steve, are you in the bathroom right now? There.
I've never heard of anyone going to the bathroom saying, help me.
You've never heard of anyone go bathroom? I didn't understand that.
Ms. Dooley, you know perfectly well what I said.
Well, what I'm saying is simply this, Phil. My husband is 100% supportive.
No, I heard a man say, Mr. Henry, help me.
Yes, and he was going to...
Why would a man who's going to the bathroom ask for help?
Because there's no toilet paper, and he didn't know if you were coming to the house.
He didn't know that we were on a radio show.
I don't know. Steve, did you know that we're on the air?
I don't know.
He thought you just called the house. And he said, Mr. Henry, help me, meaning, would you stop and get toilet paper on your way over here? As it turns out, we have some. All right?
Then why did the phone go dead?
The phone went dead. The cat stepped on something. Is that the cat?
Uh-huh.
The cat stepped on the receiver. I don't know.
The cat stepped on what receiver?
Don't grill me like... Don't you dare question me.
I'm just asking, Ms. Dooley. I'm not... Do you have one of those phones that's still the hang-up kind?
The hang-up kind? Get a load of this, Steve. He wants to know if we have the kind of phone that hangs up. Yeah.
No, I mean the kind of phone that has the cradle. Everybody's phone hangs up.
Don't you dare yell at me like that.
Ms. Dooley, I'm asking, did the cat step on... What did the cat step on?
The cat stepped on the cradle.
Cats in the cradle.
What does that mean, cats in the cradle?
That's how we answer the phone sometimes. Cats in the cradle. Because our cat, a lot of times, will step on that.
Ms. Dooley, it sounds to me like you're making a whole bunch of stories up, that you're just, you're peddling here to try to...
I'm just trying to help you get to the quarter hour.
Well, I appreciate...
Cats in the cradle.
No, cats in the cradle. We're here...
877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We have our news hour coming up next after, a quick segment. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show will be right back. Cats in the Cradle.
Phil Hendry. Listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Better than you.
Don't worry about what's the matter with me. 877-876-Phil. Welcome back here on the world famous Phil Hendry Show. What?
Yeah, look, all pissed off.
Maybe I am pissed off. There's a few things I want to get straight around here, okay? Number one, all right? When somebody hangs up, bud, and then they call back, you just don't put them back on the air. You find out why they hung up.
Well, she called back since you thought about something to say.
I don't care. She hung up on me, didn't she? I heard her husband saying, Mr. Hendry, help me.
Well, maybe they were going to say.
Yeah, but when I got her back on the air and she says her husband's in the bathroom, obviously she was calling up just to give me a load, okay?
Yeah, a load, bathroom, get it?
That ain't funny, man.
Got that right. When people call back, oh, I'm sorry I hung up, I'd like to get back on the air with Phil, you tell them to cool their jets. I'll get to them when I get to them. You understand?
Yeah. I thought I'd help out.
Yeah, huh? Well, it didn't.
I thought I helped out, considering all the phone calls you're not getting. And
you shut up and get out of here. All right, anyway, welcome back to our program, 877-876-PHIL. PTC study claims almost 70% jump in bad language on broadcast TV. Foul language includes crap, damn, hell, boobs, and ass. All right. Now, this is the the Parent Television Council. It sounds like parent teacher, doesn't it, with PTC? It's actually the Parent Television Council, and it sounds very official, and it sounds all that kind of groovy. It sounds like something as a parent you might want to be a part of because it has that officious, clean, living sound. But I have yet to really understand what this group is about, what they've actually been able to achieve, how much money they are taking in, how much they are spending to affect the cleaning up of the airwaves, how much goes to salary. We read some stuff about this PTC, and it don't smell too good, I can tell you that.
No, man, they had that one story you told me about where a lot of that money goes to the salary.
Well, I don't know if it went to salary, but it went to...
Yeah, it didn't go to salary, but it didn't go to clean up to clean it. Or anything.
Well, that was something. I forget what that was. It was a, they were trying to get something off the air. And a lot of the money that they spent to try to get this thing off the air, it didn't do a lick of good. And they wound up paying more in salary, I think, than they did in anything else. I don't know, man. Anyway, on Monday night's episode of 2.5 Men, there were references to cocaine, prostitution, and two women being intimate with each other. While viewers don't seem to be turning away from the show because of its increasingly racy content, it's giving fits to the Parent TV Council, the advocacy group that is getting more and more publicity because of stories from the LA Times and other stupid publications like that. If the LA Times stopped giving the Parent TV Council publicity, then nobody'd ever hear of it, and people wouldn't be going, gee, I really like this show, and who is this group of people, and who do they represent, and why are you writing about them? Oh, you mean nobody? The Parent TV Council, the advocacy group that thinks the broadcast networks are becoming a cesspool of swear words and bad language. Well, who are they, and why should we care? I keep asking this question. Who are they, and why should we care?
They're the Parent TV Council.
Yeah, and why should we care?
Oh, Cal, they're cleaning it up.
Yeah, but what, dude, who do they represent, man?
Parents and TV.
Parents and TV? How many parents do they represent? Do they have a constituency? You know that word that I'm always telling you guys about? Constituency. What does that mean, Robert?
Well, constituency are the people that support something.
Well, yeah, okay. They're the people who are a part of an issue or they're part of a group that supports a candidate, an issue, and so forth, or are opposed to a candidate or issue, a constituency. Most disturbing to the PTC.
Well, so why'd you ask us that?
Just let me finish this. I don't know why I asked you that. Most disturbing to the PTC is that the time period showing the biggest gain is not the 10 p.m. hour when more adults are watching, but the 8 to 9 p.m. hours, which attract younger viewers. So according to Habitat for Profanity, broadcast TV's sharp increase in foul language. Oh, that's funny. So that was a study released by the PTC. There has been an almost 70% jump in bad words on broadcast TV in the past 5 years. And we're supposed to believe this? They claim to have 1.3 million members. They sent mailers out to one. That's the 1.3 million people hit an automatic reply on an email they got asking for more information. That's why they think they got 1.3 million members. You know, if you people represent something Christian, you know that lying will send you to hell, at least according to the Catholic faith.
Yeah, but they ain't Catholic. They're just regular Christian.
Well, you can lie and get away with it?
I think so, yeah.
Well, here are the words that have the biggest increase. Crap, damn, hell, ass, bitch, bastard, boobs, other breasts. Now, here's a word here that I don't think we can say, and yet they say it on television. One of the reasons why they say it on television is because they think we can say it on radio, and we can't. See, television doesn't make a move unless they hear radio make the move first. And then they make the move, and we ain't made the move, man. You did. So you guys are saying this word that starts... I don't even know that I can say balls unless I say, like George Carlin, you know, four balls and no strikes.
Yeah.
Other genitals. Then the bleeped out F word. Then a euphemism for the F word. Then a bleeped out S word. A euphemism for the S word. Douche. P-I-S-S, screw and suck. Well, I don't know why I spelled that.
Now, that shows you're afraid to say that word, man, because you know you've been, what do they call that, a fine from the SEC?
Well, the New York Times writes that they claim to have 1.3 million members, the Parent Television Council, but that number counts people who have signed a petition or donated since the group's founding, according to the council. In reality, 12,000 people at most respond to annual fundraising appeals. All right. You know, the group is, that's the last story I read from the Parent Television Council. They don't exist. No one cares. I've never in my life seen, except here in recent memory, the ability of anyone to manipulate media into people thinking it's a big story. The Parent Television Council has gotten far too much publicity based upon the people that belong to their group, the people that pay attention to their garbage, the people that care about whether they live or die, the people that even their relatives don't care whether they live or die. The Parent Television Council is a non-existent, I'll bet you money they're taking the dollars that they do get donated to them, and they're blowing it in every direction. I'll bet you they're taking junkets to Vegas. I bet you people, the PTC, man, you haven't seen a resort hotel yet that you don't like with that money.
Well, man, they could sue you for that.
I don't care if they do. Go ahead, sue me, man. I'd like to take a look at your books and find out what you're doing with this. What are you doing with all the donations you get? What are you doing with it? What the hell do you do, man? Do you, what, a letter writing campaign? Is that what you do? Let me give you a piece of advice. For the Parent Television Council, here's a piece of advice. Number one, you ain't going to take anything off the air that's making money. You are not going to take anything off the air that's making money unless you can get a law passed, unless you can get the Congress of the United States to somehow intercede on your behalf and pass a law. But the Congress of the United States will not intercede on anybody's behalf unless something is so egregious, so unbelievably profane. I mean, the one incident that I can think of over the last 10 years was the Janet Jackson Super Bowl boob shot. And it was so funny the way people reacted to that, because on the one hand, oh, it's just a woman's breast. On the other hand, well, there are children watching, and so perhaps they might have been a little more careful. And these people that consider themselves really good parents, well, yeah, but then again, it's just a boob, and who cares? And then I made the point, yeah, but it's Janet Jackson's, which makes it pretty ugly. And
are you kidding me, man? You think Janet Jackson ugly?
I think she's frightening, yeah.
Are you kidding? She's hot.
Not anymore, she ain't. She used to be.
Janet Jackson, man, she's the best. The best in the West.
No way. No way, no way, man. Not Janet Jackson, no, sorry. All right, so that was the most, I guess that was the most raucous of events when that happened. Okay? Beyond that, no one is going to do anything to help the PTC do anything. So you think you're going to do a letter-writing campaign? Now, I can tell you this much. I've been around shows where there have been sponsor boycotts, and it doesn't make any difference because this is what a sponsor does. The sponsor goes away for a while, and then they come back. The sponsor goes away while the heat is on, and then they come back. And what a good network does, or a good broadcaster, if there's a sponsor boycott of a show because the PTC got a letter-writing campaign going, what happens is this. The sponsor will go away, and the people that sell the show go out and find other sponsors to take their place. Maybe they're selling the time for less money. Maybe they take a little bit of a hit financially, but they ain't going to kick the show off the air because they understand what's driving this. A temporary bit of exasperation and publicity. So in about 3 months, that wears off, and guess what? Here comes the old sponsor. And if you think I'm kidding, you ever heard of Don Imus?
Oh! That is a good point.
Good point? They brought that guy back from the dead, man. The dead!
Yeah, but that's only on account of Fox, man. If there hadn't been no Fox, they never would have done that.
If there hadn't been no Fox, well, okay, if there hadn't been no TV, man, he wouldn't have been. What are you talking about, there hadn't been no Fox? If there hadn't been television, if there hadn't been competition among networks, if there hadn't been a Fox, maybe he wouldn't have said what he said. Maybe there wouldn't have been that kind of influence extant on the airwaves of America, and Don Imus might have, he might have sidestepped that. I don't know.
What are you saying? You're saying Fox made him say all about Negroes and stuff?
What do you mean Negro, man?
He's talking about the nappy-headed thing. No, I'm just saying that discourse... On cable news and on cable television might not have been quite that wild had there been no Fox, and Imus might not have said what he said. That's all I'm saying. Don Imus, who's the oh Dr. Laura too? She had to come back from some pretty serious hits, and come back they did. We'll be back next hour with our news hour, Phil Hendry Show.
What are you talking about,
Phil Hendry? Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Communication started approximately 2 years ago, up until recently when it started to...
I think the laws that we passed, they were good.
These are kids who are getting less sleep, who are less physically...
I hope I'm just a success. I'm going to be dead.
Take your stinking paws off me, you jack.
Famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, with a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch, and where, come what may, baby, we go where other talk shows wish they could go. Coming up this hour, the Pentagon cannot explain if a missile was launched off the coast of Southern California. Why would they explain when it was an extraterrestrial civilization that launched that missile? And can criticizing your boss on a Facebook page get you fired? Keith Olbermann returns to MSNBC, and Joe Miller goes to court in his fight to win his Senate race in Alaska. Our number 877-876-PHIL. Keith Olbermann, and along with me, of course, is Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard in our NewsHour here. Keith Olbermann is back from his suspension. He returned to Countdown, the TV show that he does there on MSNBC. It was a two-day suspension. And he came back with a bang on Tuesday, according to the Huffington Post. So understand that that's a very, very slanted, very, very biased website, they would be very slanted and very biased in favor of Keith Olbermann, even to the point where they'd say things like he came back with a bang. And we don't know what that means. Nonetheless, he did come back with a bang, and Ms. Huffington, smiling, said, I'm kidding. Anyway, he came back with whatever it was, and he sidled into the view of the cameras in front of his empty seat, saying, this is not a publicity stunt. Of course, if I'd known all this would happen, I would have done this years ago. In other words, Keith, you got a lot of people watching your show. Well, good, good, man. That's great, because that was something that you needed to have happen. Otherwise, the network might have gone ahead with the firing of Keith Olbermann and, you know, gone to Plan B, because apparently they ain't making any money with you anymore, man. Later at the end of the show, Olbermann talked for just about 6 minutes about his suspension, although it probably seemed like forever. He said he was stunned and grateful to viewers, and that he didn't know that anybody gave one half of a holy crap about him. And when he found out that he had three people watching, let alone anybody, he was stunned, he was grateful, he dropped to his knees and wept like an old woman. And that he owed them three apologies. The first was for having subjected you to all of this unnecessary drama, although I don't really mean that, I enjoyed it. The second was his failure to know about the rule regarding political donations at NBC, although he said such a rule was not in his contract, and any rule like that in any company is probably not legal. Not in his contract. I guarantee you it was something that he signed. It probably wasn't in his contract, but it was some addendum that he signed, and he isn't being honest with you about that. Now, is he, Mr. and Mrs. America? Was he being honest with you, Adriana, or Ariana, or whatever her name is, Mrs. Huffington? When he was going to leave your house and come back and say, well, I just ended my suspension with a bang. Anyway, so the second was his failure to know about the rule regarding political donations at NBC. And the third apology was to the electoral opponent of one of the people he donated to, Gabrielle Giffords of Arizona, for including him in a worst person in the world segment the day after he made the donation. Ooh! And by the way, is that a he or a she? Would you, my staff, please, Robert, Bud, would you look that up?
What are you talking about?
Gabrielle Giffords. Last time I checked, that's a chick's name, but... So, Keith Olbermann made a donation. It's a she. So, the Huffington Post don't know the difference between a him or a she or a he or an it, man. And neither does Keith Olbermann, for that matter. Mr. Huffington. So, here's the thing. Keith Olbermann made a donation to the opponent of Gabrielle Giffords, then went on the air and called Gabrielle Giffords the worst person in the world. See, as slimy as all of that appears, who cares? Everybody knows what he's about. Everyone understands him. He refers to her opponent. He refers to her opponent, Jesse Kelly. That makes no sense, man. You're going to have to rewrite that in a manner in which somebody on the radio, looking at that for the first time while reading a news story, while trying to keep a radio show going, understands what you're talking about. He refers to her opponent, Jesse Kelly, a male. What is that? Anyway, he apologized for including Gabrielle Giffords in the worst person in the world segment the day after he made the donation. Olbermann said he had not known that the man, Jesse Kelly, was running against Giffords. He refers to her opponent, Jesse Kelly, a male. His third apology was to the electoral opponent of one of the people he donated to, Gabrielle Giffords of Arizona, for including him in a worst person in the world segment. So he was apologizing to the electoral opponent of this guy, Gabrielle Giffords, for including him. You know that you're in real trouble on a radio show, man, when you got to sit here and go through a freaking English lesson with your staff. After thanking various columnists, including conservatives like Bill Kristol and Jonah Goldberg and MSNBC figures, and after playing clips of Jay Leno and Jon Stewart discussing the suspension, Olbermann returned to the topic of his donations, pointing out that at least transparency is alive and, well, whatever.
What's the matter?
The story completely has lost interest to me now because I don't know what I'm reading and I can't get any information. Joe Miller sues to force exact spelling rule for write-in votes, but on October the 31st, he said he would support the will of the electorate even if they misspelled Murkowski's name. This is a big story here, folks, I guess. GOP nominee Joe Miller is asking a federal judge to keep the state from using discretion in counting write-in ballots in Alaska's hotly contested Senate race. The suit was filed today, the day before election officials plan to begin counting write-in ballots. Miller's rival, Senator Lisa Murkowski, waged a write-in campaign after losing the primary to Miller. Write-ins lead Miller in initial vote totals, but it's not clear how many of those are for Murkowski. Okay, so Miller's campaign argues the state should be held to the law, which states that a ballot oval must be filled in and either the candidate's last name or name as it appears on a declaration of candidacy written in. The state has said it will use discretion when it comes to misspellings or variations of Murkowski's name, with officials pointing to case law as their basis for this, meaning if they spelled her name Smith, well, not that crazy. This is a new position for Joe Miller. In an interview with Fox News, Neil Cavuto, on October the 31st, Miller was asked specifically about this scenario. Cavuto asked, quote, if a number of Alaskans misspell Senator Murkowski's name in the write-in portion of the ballot, there are going to be available to everyone next week. Should those votes be honored and recognized? Miller said at the time, yes. He said, yes, they should be recognized. He said, yes, they should be counted. He said, yes. Let's listen. I think we actually have that, don't we? We have that audio. This is Joe Miller here. And in this particular piece of audio, this interview is with Neil Cavuto. It's October the 31st, and he asked Miller if the votes that misspell Lisa Murkowski's name should be honored or discarded.
Well, we know there's going to be a lot of misspellings because even Murkowski's ads have misspelled her name. I think there's been two that have gone out. So, you know, frankly, it's the will of the electorate. And, you know, Neil, we aren't going to interfere with that. We've always been an opponent to make sure that the people's voice is heard. This is a campaign about we the people, not special interests, and we the people are going to let their voice be heard on Tuesday, not just in Alaska, but nationwide.
So he's changed his mind. He said then that they could use discretion. Now he's saying, no, they should not use discretion because, obviously, this is a very, very close race. It's very hotly contested, and Joe could lose, huh? So what does that mean when a guy changes his mind? It doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me. It really doesn't. It doesn't drive me crazy. If a guy's got a good reason, see, people that change their minds, it happens. Every single person in the world changes their mind. But why are they changing their mind? If you can figure out why they're changing their mind and it makes sense.
Well, what'd be a good reason on account of this guy?
Well, maybe he changed his mind because he thought, you know what, this is pretty close. I could lose the race. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, but he said it was about the will of the people.
The will of the people, exactly. The will of the people. How do you know you don't have, like, dogs or cats signing those ballots?
What do you mean, dog or cat?
They can't seem to spell.
A lot of people can't spell.
Oh, well, that's true. Maybe dogs and cats spell better than people. It's not something that I think is a deal breaker. If the guy is, look, if he's a politician, he's got to lie somewhere along the line. Fact of the matter is, even if they didn't use discretion, or if they did, I should say, if they used discretion, he may still lose. He may still lose. All right, 877-876-PHIL here on a world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. Can criticizing your boss on Facebook get you fired? Plus, which song is selling big at iTunes? The Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show, despite economic boycott, L.A. to buy Arizona tasers. And welcome back here, our number 877-876-PHIL, and our website, philhendryshow.com, to watch live streaming video of the show and listen to the live streaming audio. And if you're watching the live streaming video of the show, do not adjust your color. My face is that color of red.
Yeah, it's a color not occurring in a natural world.
Yeah. What's your problem?
I just don't like it.
Oh, he's still hung up on that.
You're worried about that. Who cares? I mean, you want to make some money.
Look, Robert, if those guys want to be themselves on those shows, he's hung up about some show he's watching on ID where the actual cops play themselves. Is that it?
Yeah. I mean, that police officer, not supposed to be play acting on a TV show.
Those shows, I don't like any of those shows that have those stupid-ass reenactments. I'd rather just, they go to the documentary footage, and that's that, man. What's the name of this thing?
I don't know, something called Dead Lady or something.
What do you mean Dead Lady, man? It's called, what do you call it? Cold Case.
Cold Case? You mean the one on CBS?
No, man. It's on Investigation Discovery.
Oh, I don't even know what that show is. All right. Despite economic boycott, you know, look at this is all about saving money on the budget, man. So if those cops that want to, you know, that were in that TV show, that's Kenneth Bianchi, man. This is like a real thing. That's the real guy there.
Yeah, I know, but they're using like fake guy. They're using like some like fake cops and everything.
Yeah, that sucks. But that Bianchi was a good looking guy, wasn't he? Not. What an ugly mother he was. All right, anyway, the Los Angeles City Council voted unanimously today to continue acquiring tasers from a Scottsdale-based company despite an ongoing economic boycott of Arizona. Well, how about that? Now, the only thing surprising about this is that the LA Weekly called it the boycott toothless, like the Weekly just discovered something, like the real news flash here.
You know, they didn't know?
What do you mean they didn't? Everybody knows except the LA Weekly. Everybody in California knows that this jackass boycott of Arizona, completely misguided, utterly without any thought, no real thought. What do you mean boycott Arizona? What does that mean? The state decided to test the constitutionality of the prohibition, if you will, or traditional prohibition of states dealing with the border problem. By passing this law, that's a completely legitimate effort. There's nothing wrong with testing the constitutionality of, say, the federal right to supremacy when it comes to controlling the borders. Maybe they felt if they could do it better and they found a loophole or they found a friendly judge or whatever. What's the problem with that? Do you understand what's happening in Mexico right now, that there's a drug war going on? Do you understand that we have a problem with certain outlaw elements along our border? Do you understand that as many of us predicted, myself included, 10, 15, 20 years ago, that's right, when we said that the political climate in Mexico is going to become so untenable, it's going to become so unbearable, that one of two things is going to happen. A repressive regime will take over in Mexico, a la Nicaragua or Cuba, which ain't going to happen because the U.S. government is going to let it happen. Or number two, that the present government will collapse in some way, shape, or form, causing Mexico to become what is known as a failed state. And then you don't like, the immigration problem right now. Jack, you ain't seen nothing yet. And I would just love to ask some of the people who have been on the side of a more lax policy, shall we say, when it comes to immigration. Are you ready for refugees by the millions? Are you ready for that? Now, if you think I'm joking or kidding around or I'm in some kind of a fairyland, man, you better wake up and pay attention to what the hell's going on down there.
You talk about they'll come flooding over the border or something?
I'm saying, bud, that in any situation having to do with the collapse of a government and the outbreak of a kind of civil war, there is a refugee problem. Now, if there's any kind of a civil war in Mexico, there's no question at all that the United States military is going in. And for you people that don't get it, just shut up. For you people that are, oh, there goes America with its military. That is an absolutely necessary move. The United States doesn't move if there is a civil war in Mexico and we don't move militarily, we are acting irresponsibly. And any jackass that says to me, well, there goes America pushing its military weight around, man. Why don't we just let the people of Mexico solve the problem? No, you don't let something like that happen on your borders. You do not. That you would be acting irresponsibly if you did. It would be a non-humanitarian thing to do, not to intercede militarily. Because if a civil war breaks out in Mexico, the refugee problem will be only the tip of the iceberg. And I'm almost, and this is going to sound horrible, I'm almost wishing one would, because then there would be a refugee problem. And then everybody that thinks that the immigration thing is overblown and that we got bigger problems and this and that and something else, wait till you see them pouring over the border by the bucket load, man.
Man, that'll be a lot of people.
A lot of people? You ain't seen nothing. And if you think I'm just sitting here singing a happy song, man, I mean, this is being contemplated right now by the United States government. It's being contemplated by our State Department. It's being contemplated, obviously, by Homeland Security and by the Department of Defense. In other words, it's being contemplated by our president, President Obama. He's aware of it. And as the president and as the commander-in-chief, he has to begin to implement plans dealing with that possibility.
But they got that war book thing. They do that?
I don't know if they got a war. Yeah, they must have a war book. There's a war book. Every country has a war book. And the United States, one of the things they criticized the United States for was after 9/11, our war book, so to speak, was so outdated. It was based upon a Cold War model. And basically what a war book is this. It's the military options that we have should war break out anywhere in the globe. If war broke out anywhere.
What about, like, the South Pole?
Yeah.
The South Pole.
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
We have a war book for the South Pole.
Who would invade there?
But if you're asking me about the South Pole, yes, we do.
What about, like,
think of a good one.
Mongolia.
Will you guys get out of here? Yes, Mongolia, all of it. And we have, obviously, we have some kind of a military contingency for Central America, South America, and Mexico. Now, whether that's been updated or not up to this point, I don't know. But President Obama has ordered the Department of Defense and Homeland Security to get it updated, but quick. Now, what do you think that means? Number one, the border's got to be reinforced. It has to be protected at all costs. Number two, probably some kind of a demilitarized zone between the United States and Mexico. Number three, what is exactly the plan of action? What is the military operation going into Mexico to try to calm any civil unrest? Do we do it a la NATO, you know, just marching the troops down there? Do we do it battalion style the way we did in Iraq? How do we do it? What kind of cooperation do we need from local authorities? Who do we get in touch with? Who are the groups and elements that we would want to be in contact with as allies in a situation like that? I mean, we have to start thinking about this because now the good news is this. The reason why there is so much violence in Mexico is because the government in Mexico is fighting back. It is asserting itself, and that's why there is this uptick in violence. But the bad news is they're not making too much headway. If you'll pardon the expression, because I think they've been cutting guys' heads off.
What?
Yeah.
You're kidding. Like they did over in the Middle East?
Yeah, they were cutting guys' heads off.
Man, you're kidding, man.
I'm not kidding. They were cutting cats' heads off down there, man.
Like who?
Like cops. Like judges. Cutting their head. I mean, that's how brutal. And they're doing it, and they're sending a message. They're saying, we are the drug cartels, and you guys are going to have to deal with us. I mean, they're scumbags. And there's only one way of dealing with scumbags. You got to go down there and you got to blowtorch their asses out of whatever nest they have. And Mexico doesn't seem to be able to have the juice to do it. There's only one country around here that I know of that does. We do. And there's only one problem with all of that. We don't seem to have the political will to do diddly squat these days. We're sitting around with our thumbs parked up our rear ends, worrying about how people think about us. I mean, I'm telling you.
So what about these tasers, man?
What tasers?
The story you were going to do.
Oh, I forgot about the story. Anyway, the boycott of Alaska, of Arizona by the state of California sucks. Because get this, man, we've boycotted Arizona, but we like the tasers they make there. So we're buying those tasers for the L.A. Police Department, our airport police, our harbor police, our General Services Office of Public Safety, and a whole bunch of other coppers because we can't find tasers that good. So as far as the boycott of Arizona goes, yeah, it's on, except for the tasers.
Good.
The world famous Phil Henry Show will be right back. A dad fights for his son's right to bring a racy backpack to school. What a douchebag. Let me hear this story. Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. You're listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Here's an interesting case. It has to do with people who are, you know, on Facebook. Sometimes they're on Facebook doing promotional work. Maybe they're on Facebook promoting a business. Maybe they're on Facebook, interacting with a certain community that they have a fiduciary or other kind of responsibility to. Or sometimes they're just on Facebook because they're sitting on their fat ass doing nothing, right? Can criticizing the boss on Facebook get you fired? Now, the National Labor Relations Board thinks this is open and shut. They're saying that a woman who got canned for criticizing her boss at a company, I think it's some kind of an ambulance company or American Medical Response, they say that she should not have been fired because the law is fairly straightforward. The National Labor Relations Act says that people can discuss workplace conditions. They can talk about their supervisor. They have a right to do that. Now, they say, the lawyer says, they have a right to do that at the water cooler or on Facebook. Now, I wonder what legal precedent or law is in place or what ruling, what court ruling is in place that says, oh, yeah, you can do that on Facebook, too. I didn't know that. I didn't know if I'm a member of a union, but I'm also somebody who's dealt with individuals who defame or slander or libel you. Now, some people don't understand this, but I would suggest you do the following thing. Just put yourself in the shoes of someone. Say you have children and you have a name, and someone goes out into the public and says that Joe Blow and his five kids are all a bunch of white trash scum, and they're screwing up this property that I live on, and they're smoking dope, and basically went public and called you the scum of the earth, right? Do you think you'd want to sue that guy? I think you might. Probably want to do worse. Now, when some fat slut, Dawn Marie Souza was fired after using vulgarities to ridicule her supervisor in a Facebook post, she also wrote, using the company's terminology for a psychiatric patient, "I love how the company allows a 17 to become a supervisor." She said she and the supervisor had clashed after the supervisor would not let a union representative help her to prepare a response to a customer's complaint about her work. Right? The company says it has a policy that bars employees from depicting the company on Facebook and other social media sites in which they post pictures of themselves. The NLRB argues that the rule is overly broad and that the firing of Souza violates the National Labor Relations Act, which, among other things, prohibits employers from punishing workers for discussing working conditions or unionization. I'm familiar with that. I'm also familiar with the slandering of people. The National Labor Relations Act does not allow you to take out a billboard on a freeway and say that my boss, Harry Brown, is a scumbag, molests children, is a psycho. You don't get to do that. Now, this lawyer is talking pretty confident because that's what lawyers are supposed to do. However, what they're basically saying is that an employee can go on Facebook and talk by name, about a supervisor, call the guy a psycho, get all upset about the fact that you got fired, and they put that under the heading of discussing working conditions. Well, guess what? No, it ain't. That's not discussing working conditions. That's simply defaming an individual because you're angry at them. That's talking crap about a person because you're pissed off at them. And there's no law in the world that allows you to do that. The employee in question was discharged based on multiple serious complaints about her behaviors, the company said in a statement. The employee was also held accountable for negative personal attacks against a coworker posted publicly on Facebook. The company believes that the offensive statements made against the coworker were not concerted activity protected under federal law. What they're basically saying is these statements had nothing whatsoever to do with collective bargaining, unionization, or improving working conditions. These statements were personal attacks, and therefore they felt did not fall under this National Labor Relations Act language. An administrative law judge is going to begin the hearing on January the 25th. Is this story a news story? Does this story warrant attention from the Phil Hendry Show, Yahoo News, The Upshot, and any other news service that might have carried it? Does it or doesn't it? Bud?
Well, yeah, I mean, you're talking about it and everything. It sounds pretty interesting and stuff like that.
Robert?
Well, the fact that you asked the question, I'd say no.
Well, the answer to the question is probably no, because it is not something that is unique. It's probably going on in varying degrees and in varying ways all over the country. the idea that people are attacking each other on Facebook or saying things about each other on Twitter. We've dealt with this when it came to schools. Kids are talking about their schools. Kids are talking about other students. Kids are talking about their teachers. Now we have people talking about this. And it has always been ruled almost consistently, with some exceptions, that the school has the right to control the speech of the child with regard to, for instance, a school and at school activities. And that the in this case, if it doesn't relate to labor relations, you don't have the right to take an anonymous person like your supervisor and slander or defame them or libel them on a Facebook post. So is this news? I say no, it isn't.
Yeah, but nobody's ever done it on Facebook, and how do you know?
Well, that the only reason why it might be news is because it involves Facebook. But there have been so many of these stories, you know.
Yeah, well, I still say it's good you do it. Because, who knows, I mean, the people going to say, I got Facebook, maybe I'll call a guy a douchebag, maybe I better not.
Yeah, well, whatever. This is the first case, here's the New York Times, the first case in which the labor board has stepped in to argue that workers' criticisms of their bosses or companies on a social networking site are generally a protected activity and that employers would be violating the law by punishing workers for such statements. This is what the New York Times is saying. It's the first time the National Labor Relations Board has gone to bat for a worker... posting something on Facebook. But they're going to lose, man. They're going to lose. Because if you say that that's protected under the National Labor Relations Act, then a billboard is protected under the National Labor Relations Act. A radio commercial is protected under the... And I could take out a TV spot.
Well, man, that's crazy.
Why is that crazy, man? I could buy a television commercial and say Joe Smith is a scumbag over there at the American Medical Response, and he sucks, and I hate him, and he's a psycho.
That's not talking about working condition.
Any more than it was talking about working conditions on Facebook, but the NLRB is arguing that yes, it is. And I'm telling you, unless this judge is a complete idiot, he's going to tell him to take it and park it. Are you crazy or something, man? That's what I tell him.
What would you say?
What would I say what?
If they came in and told you that.
Who? The NLRB?
Yeah.
I'd tell them to get out.
Yeah, but why, man? I mean, a girl had a right to say what she wants to say.
No, she doesn't, man. She doesn't have the right to go on a public social site and call a guy a psycho by name. No, she does not. And that has nothing to do with unionization, collective bargaining, or workplace conditions. My ass. That has to do with just a petty... individual who's looking to take a personal shot at someone very, very publicly, and in the process humiliating that person, libeling that person, she ought to get her ass sued. As a matter of fact, if I was that guy, I'd sue the hell out of her. I love the civil courts in this country. Love it, man. Love it. Because where the criminal courts don't give you justice, you can turn around and sue the hell out of someone. And then pay your ass off for the rest of the time you're alive. You can't just go on any site and say these things. Now, this guy's a private guy.
Yeah, but people are always talking about you like you're a douchebag.
Well, they do, man.
Of course they do, but I'm a public personality.
What's the difference?
The difference is I'm a public personality. I have to take those shots. It's assumed that because I'm a public personality, I'm in the public discourse, that people are going to talk about me. So if people say Phil Henry's a douchebag, I have to accept that because my name's out here every day. I willingly and publicly put my name into the public arena. All right. No one's taking it and forcing it out of me. So if someone says Phil's a douchebag or a psycho or any, if it's just a listener, you mean?
Yeah, like a guy on Facebook or something.
Yeah, they can do that. Now, let's say it was somebody that knew me, someone that worked with me. And they said that on this date and that date, Phil Henry did this, that, and this, and that. I could sue them.
Why?
Because they'd be lying.
How do you know you didn't do it?
I'm assuming that I didn't do whatever it is they said I did. Okay, will you follow with me here? I could sue them. But the difference is this gentleman with this company is a private citizen. He's not a public personality. He's not someone whose name is broadcast daily. He's not an individual who's known to the public. He's known to his coworkers. He's known to his company. And this woman took his name and put it on this social networking site, not in a way just to say, hey, I know Joe, and he's a guy that I work with, or hey, I know Joe, he's a guy that I work with, he's a really nice guy, or any of these things. She put it on there and said he is a psychiatric patient. This guy needs help, and so on and so forth. So there's a couple of things going on here. And first of all, she's going to lose, man, unless that judge is brain dead, making some claim that that's a discussion of collective bargaining or somehow unionization. And number two, that guy would have a case to sue her for libel because of what she said about him. So we'll wait and see. Meanwhile, the Pentagon can't explain a missile off the coast of California. Now, here's a hot one. The Pentagon on Tuesday said it was trying to determine if a missile was launched Monday off the coast of Southern California and who might have launched it. Will you get out of here?
Are you kidding me? They don't know what I did it.
Oh, is he crying?
What's the matter, man?
They usually know who done it.
Oh, quit babying, okay? Are you crying, man?
Well, why don't they know?
Well, let's just look at this. The Pentagon Tuesday said it was trying to determine if a missile was launched Monday off the coast of Southern California and who might have launched it. All right. Now, we know that we have Vandenberg Air Force Base out there. We also have Point Magoo Naval Air Station. We have the Port Hueneme Construction Battalion. We have the Ventura County Naval Harbor. Ventura County Naval Base, I should say. So there's a lot of, they're off the central coast here, and I don't even know exactly what they're talking about, but I'm assuming they're discussing off the central coast here. There's a lot of crap going on. But spokespeople for the Navy, Air Force, Defense Department, and North American Aerospace Defense Command said they were looking into a video posted on CBS News website that appears to show a rocket or some other object shooting up into the sky and leaving a large contrail over the Pacific Ocean. The video was shot by CBS affiliate KCBS Helicopter. By the helicopter, the station said on Tuesday. Nobody within the Department of Defense that we've reached out to has been able to explain what this contrail is, where it comes from. So far, we've come up empty with any explanation. Officials are talking to the Air Force, Navy, and NORAD, as well as the civilian authorities who control and monitor airspace. Right now, all indications are that there was not, that is, a Department of Defense, involvement in this, adding that some object might have been launched by a private company or by a private individual.
What do you mean?
Some guy that made a rocket in his backyard or something. The FAA told CBS News that they ran radar replays of a large area west of Los Angeles based on media reports of the location of a possible missile launch, but they did not reveal any fast-moving unidentified targets in that area. Well, guess what? I guess you got the wrong information. The FAA told CBS News they ran radar replays of a large area west of L.A. based on media reports. Why don't you guys in the media give them the right stuff?
Well, how do you know, man? I mean, maybe they did.
Obviously, they didn't. Hey, CBS, have you got a helicopter and you shot a picture of something going up? Why don't you tell the FAA where the hell it was?
I don't know. I was just flying around on it.
Well, you shot pictures of something, so there must have been something out there. So tell them where the hell it was. And as you know, information abhors a vacuum. So when there is a information vacuum, it must be filled up with something. So within the next 24 hours, men from outer space. Now, missile tests are common off of Southern California. Launches are conducted from vessels and platforms on an ocean range west of, ta-da, Point Magoo.
That named after Mr. Magoo.
Yeah, that's what it was named after, Bud, Mr. Magoo.
What an idiot, man.
The North American Air, what?
It wasn't.
No, it's not. Mr. Magoo?
Well, who's it named after?
Some other cat named Magoo, man. Not Mr. Magoo.
How do you know?
How did Mr. Magoo spell his name?
No, man, don't waste your time.
No. This is important. How did Mr. Magoo spell his name?
M-A-C-G-O-O.
Okay, how's this spelled?
Where?
Right there, man. How is that spelled?
That's spelled N-O-R-A-D.
NORAD? Not that one, this one.
Oh, M-U-G-U, Magoo.
Right, so is that Mr. Magoo?
It could be. It could be his sister.
How could that be his sister, man, when they both spell their last name the same way?
Man, forget about it. Not worth it.
Hold on. How could that be his sister?
Because she got married to another guy named Magoo. Only they spell it different in that family.
Okay, so that's great, bud. So Point Magoo is named after Mr. Magoo's sister. And she married a guy by the name of Magoo, and they spell it different. Is that the thing you want to say?
What are you getting all upset about?
No, I just want to know. Is that what you want to say?
Yeah.
Okay.
You gotta just let it go, man.
Don't keep telling me to let it go, okay? He's interrupting me. He said, was that named after Mr. Magoo? So we're going to find out if it was named after Mr. Magoo.
You want me to look it up?
No, you don't have to look it up because it wasn't named after Mr. Magoo.
Well, then why'd you say it could be about his sister?
because I'm trying to see if you understand logic, which you don't, so forget it, man. I'm not going to talk about it anymore. The North American Aerospace Defense Command, or NORAD, issued a statement jointly with the U.S. Northern Command, or NORTHCOM, saying that we should evacuate all areas on the West Coast. It appears that a craft coming from a body somewhere thousands of miles beyond the sun was attacking the Earth. No, it said that the contrail was not the result of a foreign military launching a missile. It provided no further details, and it said that it's none of our business. NORTHCOM is the U.S. Defense Command, and NORAD is a U.S.-Canadian organization charged with protecting the U.S. from the threat of missiles and a hostile aircraft. Okay, I don't know, man. We'll figure it out, folks. Maybe it was from, I can tell you right now, though, I've seen a lot of stuff go off at Vandenberg, Jack, that was all purple and wow, real different. A dad fights for his son's right to bring a racy backpack to school. Well, what father wouldn't? It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Broadcasting from the shores of
El Pacifico, Phil Hendry. Phil Hendry.
And in conclusion, our website, philhenryshow.com, with thousands of hours of archived material, as well as our daily show, available as a podcast each and every day following the show. You can get on-demand video of the show. We do a video cast every night, and for 5 days we hold on to our video archives. And you also have our mini podcasts, as well as the full podcast of the show and our classic Phil podcasts. And you also have, a whole bunch of archive stuff that's not only audio, but video. And we have our merchandise store opening up probably next week, and a lot of other goodies that are on the way on our website. So get a backstage pass and figure it out. Figure it out, man. All right, Pasco fourth grader. Pasco, that would be Newport Richey, Florida. Let me give you the story Phil style. There's a stupid father by the name of Fred Ferrer. He's a real idiot. And he's got a son. And he sent the kid off to school with a backpack. And on the backpack was a woman who's scantily clad. And there's a snake, and it doesn't seem appropriate for a fourth grader. Fourth grader, you understand what that is. That's 9 years old. Now, this stupid father sent this kid off with this backpack, and the principal, as the principal should, said, "There's a woman with no clothes on. Take the backpack home, and let's see something more appropriate." Well, because this is an ignoramus father and a product of his times, probably not very bright, nobody really pays much attention to him. He saw his opening. He saw his opportunity to get some love from the world. So what did Fred Ferrer do? Fred Ferrer is going to cause a problem. He's calling it the constitutional rights of free expression for his son. He was on a segment on the Today Show with Kathy Lee Gifford. He was just all this in a bag of pork rinds. So he says that the district policy governing student attire is unclear. In nowhere does this man evidence any real concern for his son or the other children. This psychopath and narcissist is only about him. He's only about himself and the love that the world can give him because he didn't get any, because he's kind of a dull slob. And the fact that maybe he can parlay this into a date with Kathy Lee Gifford, and the fact that people will know him and pay attention to him. But does he care about his kid? Of course he doesn't. So that's the story of Fred Ferrer in Newport Richey, where all the principal said, and well, he should have, go home, your backpack is inappropriate, get something else. And this has turned into a big fight that Kathy Lee Gifford stuck on the Today Show. Since when is she on the Today Show?
I don't know, man. She's been on for a while. She's on like that 1 hour.
Yeah, they got another hour they do, and she's on it.
What the hell? Why don't they let the dead rest? I'm kidding, okay?
Man, that's pretty hardcore coming from you.
All right, I'm kidding. God. So that's it. You don't need to know any more about that story. That's some kid who was told to go home, your backpack's inappropriate, and the stupid ass that he's got for a father now is going to cause a big problem, and the rest of us have got to have to pay for it somehow. We got to pay attention to it. We got to go and stroke his fevered brow. We got to make him feel better. We got to explain life to this dumbass. And when he realizes he's wrong, then we have to make him feel like, oh, it's okay, everybody's wrong sometime, and not make him feel too stupid. Phil Hendry Show, produced by Jason Rance, technical director Charles Wigan, and our associate producer and screener Dan Northcraft. Our website, philhendryshow.com.
What a dumbass.
Phil Hendry.